Well, look at all of you. What a good-looking parish you are. This is such a beautiful church, and the music is so good. Everything is great here at St. Wenceslaus, and I don't know what my brother is complaining about all the time. I don't understand him. Everybody, during the season of Easter, the church gives us some of the most epic and wonderful readings from all of the scriptures. I bet you were laying in bed last night saying, what is the gospel going to be tomorrow morning? Well, surprise, it's the passage of the disciples on the road to Emmaus, which is one of the most amazing conversations that happens in all of the scriptures. Maybe one of the most amazing conversations that has happened in all of history. What does God mean to convey to us in this way? Why does the church place before us on this third Sunday of Easter this extraordinary story of a conversation between the risen Jesus on the night of his resurrection with two disciples? Well, what are these disciples doing? It's the evening of Sunday, and they're walking away from Jerusalem. Mount Zion sits in the middle of the city of Jerusalem, and so everywhere you go in every direction, you're walking downhill. Jerusalem is the city which symbolizes faith, and it's evening. So these two disciples are walking downhill in darkness away from the light of faith. This is not the direction that they're supposed to be walking, and they are choked up with sadness. Their hearts have been through a blender. They had believed in Jesus. They thought that he was the Messiah who had been promised to their people by God through long centuries. And yet they watched the one in whom they had placed all of their hope mangled, beaten, crucified, executed by the Romans. And so they were bitterly disappointed. Every hope that they had been dashed. And then some women had gone to the tomb that very morning and had found his body missing, and angels had told them that he had risen from the dead. But they didn't want to believe it because they didn't want to be disappointed and heartbroken again. And so they set out downhill into the darkness away from Jerusalem. And Jesus himself, in his resurrected form, appears by them and walks with them on the road. But they're so heartbroken, their tears have so blurred and blinded their eyes that they can't see him. And so he asks them, why do you look so sad? And they said, are you the only person in all of the city who does not know the things that have happened there in the last few days? It would have been like asking somebody in Dallas, Texas, on November 23rd, 1963, are you the only person who doesn't know that the President of the United States yesterday was shot in this city? And Jesus says to them the funniest line in all of the Gospels. They say, don't you know the things that have happened in this city in the last few days? And Jesus, who had just been crucified and who was at the center of the drama, said, what sort of things? That's really wonderful. What kind of things are you talking about? And they tell him, it was Jesus the Nazarene. We thought that he was going to be the Messiah. And then he says, oh, how foolish you are. How hard of heart. How slow to believe. And then he goes through all of the scriptures and he explains to them every part of the Old Testament which had referred to him and had been a prophecy about his coming and the salvation that he would enact. He must have talked to them about how the innocent Abel, the son of Adam and Eve, had been slain by his brother Cain because of envy, put to death in a bloody way. He must have talked to them about how Abraham took his only son Isaac, the son of the promise, and put wood upon his back and had him climb Mount Moriah so that he could sacrifice his son in obedience to the command of God, and how an angel at the last moment saved him and spared him. and how Abraham spoke a prophecy that God himself would one day provide a lamb for the sacrifice. Jesus must have told them about how Moses had been called by God to lead the chosen people from slavery in Egypt, a life of bitter burden and terrible existence, through the waters of the Red Sea and through the desert of Sinai into the Promised Land. He must have talked to them about Isaiah and the prophecies of the prophet Isaiah, which said that there would be a suffering servant and that evil, wicked men would surround him and close in on him and attempt to take his life. Jesus must have quoted to them from the Psalms, Psalms like 22 and Psalm 69, who describe, both of those Psalms describe the crucifixion and what would happen. He must have talked to them about Jonah and how Jonah spent 3 days in the belly of the whale and then burst forth, as the Son of Man would spend 3 days in the belly of the earth and burst forth. And Jesus must have spoken to them about many other things in the scriptures which pointed to him. And in the midst of all of it, slowly these men, so heartbroken, their hearts in a blender, began to burn again with the light of faith, such that when they came to the town, they said to Jesus, "Don't leave us, stay with us, for the night has fallen." And so he came in, he took bread, he blessed it, he broke it, and he gave it to them. And then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him in the breaking of the bread. They realized that it was the risen Jesus, the source of all their hope, who had been with them the whole time. And then he vanished from their sight. And they burst forth into the night and ran uphill in pitch darkness back to Jerusalem. So completely transformed were they. And they said to each other, "Were our hearts not burning as he spoke to us on the way and explained the word of God to us?" And when they got back to Jerusalem, they said, "We've seen the Lord." And the apostles in the upper room said, "We've seen him too. He's risen from the dead." This is truly, truly an itinerary, a pilgrimage of faith. And it shows us, brothers and sisters, the way that God intends for faith to work in our hearts and minds too. Let's consider very briefly 3 different ways in which Jesus himself comes this morning, not tomorrow, this morning, not yesterday, right now, and teaches us about him and his presence in our lives. Number one, this story of the apostles speaking with Jesus on the road to Emmaus shows us that Jesus wants to be with us in our lives, especially in our suffering, especially in our disappointment, especially when we're sad or weeping or we don't know what to do. St. John Henry Newman says that we can understand our entire lives in the light of the cross of Jesus Christ, that the cross is the interpretive key. It's the thing that unlocks the meaning and the purpose in every aspect of our lives, especially our disappointments and our suffering and our sorrow. And so Jesus wants to come beside us in our lives, and through prayer and in friendship, walking with us along the way, he wants to explain to us why everything is happening to us and to those we love. Are you confused sometimes about your life? Do you wonder about things that are happening to people whom you care about? Do you get discouraged or downcast? Do you grow angry or despairing? If this ever happens to you, Jesus is telling you this morning in this gospel that he wants to come alongside you. And if you allow him in the intimacy of prayer, and if you listen to him, he will explain to you what is happening. You may have to wait for a time. At first, your eyes might not be opened, but he never keeps us waiting 1 minute too long. That's the first thing Jesus wants us to know today, that he will come into our lives and he will help us to understand if we let him. Secondly, Jesus is showing us the way of evangelization. Our faith is not just for us. If we keep it to ourselves, it diminishes. If we keep it to ourselves in our hearts, it grows cold and small. But if we begin to give our faith away, if we find joyful ways to share our faith, then our faith begins to grow. Pope Francis, our Holy Father, preached a sermon, a very powerful sermon, about this gospel to a group of bishops in Brazil in 2013. In that address, he said to the bishops, "There are a lot of people who are walking away from Jerusalem. There are a lot of people who are gone from the church, who have left the church. There are a lot of people who aren't coming here this morning. Between the morning mass, which is a very early mass, 7:30, and this mass, I went up to Walmart to get some chicken broth for my brother so he doesn't die. Because I don't have time for that. It would be complicated to my life. And so I went up there. Lots of people up at Walmart early in the morning on a Sunday. I took my collar out so that I wouldn't scandalize people. And I wandered But there they are. What are they doing? Many of them won't go to church. Many of them don't know the Lord. Many of them were baptized and confirmed as Catholics and haven't been here in years. What's going on with them? People leave the church for many different reasons, and they're walking downhill in the nighttime away from Jerusalem. And Pope Francis said to those bishops in Brazil, he said, oftentimes the seeds of their return are planted within or hidden within their reasons for going. And we have to be attentive to that if we know people in our lives who have left the church or who don't come to Mass or who are far from God in the sacraments. There are people who are discouraged by the scandals in the church. And it's up to us, not somebody else, it's up to us to find a way to explain to them that yes, there is wickedness in the church, but there's also much good. And lives can be transformed, their lives can be transformed, and they can find hope again here in the fold, in the communion of the church. There are lots of people who wonder about the teachings of the church, and they say that they're too hard. The church hates people with same-sex attraction, hates people who are divorced and remarried, can't deal with all the messiness of human life. And so as a result, I don't want anything to do with a church like that. And it's up to us to say, no, the church has clear teachings about human love in the divine plan, what it means to give oneself away in love, what freedom really is, that freedom doesn't mean just doing whatever I want, but being able to do that which is true and beautiful and good. And the church helps with that and, in fact, gives us the true pathway forward. And so it's up to us to look and to find ways in which we can cooperate with God and the Holy Spirit in the great work of evangelization. Jesus shows us that in this gospel because he comes alongside these broken-hearted disciples who have lost their faith, and he begins to explain to them why they're feeling, the way that they're feeling, and the way that their hearts can become burning again with light and love. And we can do that for other people. And in fact, it's not optional. We're called by God to do it. And thirdly, Jesus in this gospel explains to us the Mass. He explains to us this whole thing. A lot of people in the last category don't come to church because they think that it's boring. They don't think that it holds anything for them. But that cannot happen to us. And so Jesus explains to us what happens in the Mass by this passage of Emmaus. Do you notice in the first part where while he's walking with them, he's explaining all of the scriptures to them? That's what happens in the liturgy of the word in this first part of the Mass where we listen to the scriptures and then we have to suffer through some dumb homily. The reason that that happens is because our hearts are meant to come alive to the mysteries of God that are revealed to us in the sacred scriptures. That's what Jesus is doing on the road to Emmaus with the two disciples, and he's doing it with us this morning. And then our hearts begin to get warm again, and we say to the stranger in our midst, we say, "Stay with us. We don't quite know who you are, but stay with us. Don't leave us. We need you. And Jesus does stay with us, and he moves to the altar. And then, just like those two disciples in their home in Emmaus, they watch Jesus, and we watch Jesus take bread, bless it, break it, and give it to us. And then, I'm not very good. There. And then we recognize him in the breaking of the bread. Our eyes are opened, and suddenly we realize this is the least boring thing that I'll do all week long. Jesus, God, the second person of the Blessed Trinity, is here in our midst and comes to me, and I receive him into my body and into my soul. And without that, I'll shrivel up and die. I can't stay away from Mass. And just like the disciples who burst out and run up the hill to tell everybody about it, that's what we're meant to do when we finish Mass. We burst out of the doors of this church and we tell everybody with our words and, more importantly, with our actions and the joy with which we live that we've met the risen Christ and that he's here with us. This gospel is great. It's really wonderful, and it's a great gift to us on this third Sunday of Easter. And so now let's move to the altar, and let's ask the Lord to stay with us so that we can recognize him in the breaking of the bread.